but whose magic? Instead, I had to compete with a perfect ghost, Leaf said, and attacked. Chunks of wood flew through the air as I blocked his wide blade. It was only a matter of time before he would destroy my bow, and I was running out of room in the narrow landing. There was a hallway to my left, and an open doorway on my right. Mother refused to leave our house, and Father was never home. All because of you. Leaf puffed with effort. And you stayed away just to spite me, didn't you? You're my strangler, Fig, and now it's time to chop you down.
Ferda had disappeared. I felt Gelsey's brief cry of alarm as Ferda entered her room.
He planned to finish the ritual while Leaf kept me occupied,
and it was working.
With a loud crack, my bow splintered in two. Leaf advanced and I formed a magical shield, but he walked right through. As a last-ditch effort, I sent out my mental awareness, entering his dark mind. Hate and self-loathing filled his thoughts.
I felt another presence in Leaf's head.
Ferda had Storyweaver abilities, and he had brought out all of Leaf's raw emotions and used them against me. As Leaf sliced his machete toward me, I stepped to the left, bringing my awareness back. I couldn't defend myself physically while mentally gone. I just wasn't that strong.
Leaf pulled his weapon back and thrust at me again.
I had nothing left to defend myself.
Pearl's device was out of reach.
Gelsey's pleas for help burned through my thoughts like a hot poker, energizing me. I projected myself into Leaf's mind, taking control of his body like I had done with Goal. Halting the tip of his machete a mere inch from my stomach, I made Leaf step back. Pushing through the darkness of Leaf's mind, I found the young boy who had watched his sister being kidnapped, untainted with the feelings of guilt and hate. At that moment, he held only curiosity and disbelief. Two emotions that Ferda wouldn't be able to use against me. I sent Leaf into a deep, dreamless sleep. He crumpled to the floor as I went back to my body. Stopping Ferda was paramount. I would deal with Leaf later, I hoped. Picking up Pearl's device, I sprinted down the hall, searching for Gelsey. Only the last door on the left had been closed. Locked. I yanked my picks out and unlocked the door. My fastest time yet. Jenka would be proud. The door swung inward, and I stumbled into the room. Ferda had his hands around Gelsey's throat. I watched in horror as all animation left her face. Her eyes turned sightless and flat. Ferda shouted and thrust his fists toward the ceiling in celebration.
Chapter 33. Too late. With my heart sinking, I watched Ferda rejoice.
But then I saw a strange shadow rise from Gelsey's body. Before logic could overrule, I dove. Knocking Ferda aside, I inhaled this shadow, gathering Gelsey's soul inside me. It felt as if the world paused for a moment so I could tuck her into a safe corner of my mind. Then, snap, movement resumed and I fell on top of Ferda. Pearl's device flew from my hand. It landed next to the wall. After a brief struggle, Ferda pinned me to the floor, sitting on my stomach.
"That's my soul," he said. "Give it back."
"It doesn't belong to you."
"Yelena?"
I felt Gelsey's confusion in my mind. "Hold on," I told her. Ferda reached toward my neck. I grabbed his hands, and using his forward momentum, I pushed him further off balance with my left knee. I planted my left foot on the floor and twisted my hips, rolling him off me. I jumped up and assumed a fighting stance. Ferda smiled and regained his feet with a panther-quick grace.
"We are well matched, but I think I have the advantage."
I braced for an attack, but he didn't move. His red tattoos began to glow until they burned my eyes. He caught my gaze with his own, staring at me with his dark brown eyes. Ferda's face transformed into Rayad's. My world spun and I found myself back in Rayad's bedroom in Ixia, tied to the bed and watching Rayad dig through his chest of torture devices. After an initial moment of panic and fear that I would be forced to relive Rayad's torture, the scene jumped ahead to Rayad's stunned expression as hot blood gushed from his throat, soaking me.
"You are a killer too," Ferda said in my mind.
Images of the other men I had killed flashed by.
You have the power to collect souls without the need for symbols and blood. Why do you think Rayad still haunts you? You have taken his soul, your first of many more. I see the future, and yours doesn't improve.
The images spun dizzyingly, and Iris's cold eyes stared at me as I watched Valak swing from a noose. Leif's hatred pounded in my mind, along with Cahill's desire to have me executed. The commander smiling in satisfaction at my trial for committing espionage, because he had gotten what he wanted from me, and now I would no longer be a problem for Ixia.
Look at what the master magicians did to that soul finder long ago, Ferda said.
A man who had been chained to a post was set on fire. His screams of pain vibrated in my mind. Ferda held that image until the man's skin had burned away. I struggled to regain control over my mind, but Ferda's magic equaled a master, and I couldn't push him away.
The soul finder only wanted to help, bringing the dead back to life for their family and friends. It wasn't his fault they were different when they awoke, Ferda said in my mind. Panic and fear of the unknown condemned him, just like the Council will condemn you, too. All that I have shown you will be your fate. I see it in your story threads. Moonman isn't your true story weaver. I am.
His logic was persuasive. He understood my desire to find my place. It was next to him.
Soul finder and soul stealer. Yes. I'll change your story, and the Council won't burn you alive. Just give me Gelsey's soul.
A small corner of my mind resisted, yelling for action. Stealing souls is wrong, I said. I shouldn't.
Then why have you been gifted with the ability if you're not supposed to use it?
Ferda asked. I should use it to help people.
That's what the other soul finder wanted to do. See what happened to him.
Focusing my thoughts became difficult. Ferda's control began to spread, and soon he would take Gelsey from me.
Give me the girl. If I pull her from you, you will die. You'll be the first victim of my new administration. Your parents will be the next two.
Images of Pearl being mutilated and Esau being hacked into pieces filled my mind. Blood splashed as I watched in helpless horror.
Save them. And you can have complete freedom for the first time in your life.
His strong spell enticed me. I found myself agreeing with him.
Freedom.
Ferda sent a wave of pleasure through my body. I moaned as an intoxicating mix of joy and gratification flushed through me. I wanted to give Gelsey to him, but he went too far when my soul filled with contentment, because I already owned that feeling whenever Valak held me in his arms. I swayed on my feet and sweated with the effort to keep Ferda from taking Gelsey. He had realized his mistake and launched a mental attack to get her soul. Wrapping my arms tight around my chest, I collapsed to the ground. Fire burned inside me. Tears and sweat stung my eyes, but I spotted Pearl's device nearby before pain twisted my body. All I needed was a second.
Trouble, love? Valak asked.
I need your immunity to magic.
Yours.
A resistance to magic, unlike any barrier I could form, grew in my mind, blocking Ferda's control. I opened my eyes. You almost had me, I said to Ferda. I picked up Pearl's device and stood on unsteady legs. Ferda's surprise didn't last long.
No matter. The effort to repel me has weakened you.
In two strides, he closed the distance between us. His hands wrapped around my throat. He was right. While I didn't have the power to stop him, I could do something else. As his thumbs pressed into my windpipe, I lifted Pearl's device. Black and white spots began to dance in front of my eyes. Before Ferda could react to my movement, I aimed the nozzle at him and pumped the rubber ball, spraying curare into his face. Invented to apply perfume, Pearl's little device worked like a charm. Ferda's face froze in horror. I pushed his hands away and he fell to the ground.
There will be others,
was Ferda's last thought before the drug paralyzed his body and his magic. Once satisfied that he was frozen, I entered his mind. trapped within the darkness were all the souls he had stolen. I released them into the sky. Feeling a rush of movement, I briefly joined the freed souls, soaking in their happiness and joy. Then I returned to my body. Without a moment to lose, I scooted over to Gelsey. Resting the tips of my fingers on her neck, I concentrated on her injuries and repaired them, including the cuts along her arms and legs. "Go back," I told Gelsey. She had huddled in my mind, frightened and confused during the battle with Ferda, but now she understood. Her body bloomed with life, and she drew in a long, shaky breath. I cut her bonds with my switchblade, and after spitting out the soggy theobroma pill, I lay next to her, feeling exhausted and spent. She clung to me. My throat blazed with each lungful of air. After a long while, I summoned the energy to stand, pulling Gelsey with me. We found Gelsey's clothes, and I helped her into them. Before guiding her down to the living room to rest on a comfortable couch, I waved a hand out one of the second-story windows. Dax would be here soon.
"I will be expelled," she whispered.
I shook my head. "You'll be smothered with concern and understanding, and given all the time you need to recover." Once Dax arrived to take my place next to Gelsey, I went back up to the landing where I had left Leaf. Reluctance pulled at my legs. It felt as if they had been pricked with curare. I didn't have the strength to untie his twisted thoughts. My promise to Moon Man would have to wait a while longer. I drew Leaf into a lighter sleep so he would rouse after I left. Ferda's last comment had made me realize that I still had some unfinished business to attend to. Dax had a protective arm around Gelsey when I went downstairs.
"I sent a message to Master Bloodgood. The Masters are on their way with a battalion of guards to take Ferda to the Keep's prison," Dax said.
"Then I better go. I'm supposed to be confined to my quarters." Dax shook his head.
"Second Magician knows what you did."
"All the more reason not to be here when they arrive."
"But..."
I waved and hurried out the door, slinging my backpack over one shoulder. Since I had been expelled from the Keep's program, I knew I would soon be kicked out of my rooms. I planned to be long gone before giving Rose the satisfaction of evicting me. Fisk ran over to me when I crossed the courtyard.
"Did we help?" Fisk asked. "Is everything okay?"
"You did great." I rummaged in my pack and handed Fisk all the Sishin coins I had. "Distribute these to your troops." He smiled and dashed away. A bone-deep weariness settled on me as I made my way through the citadel. My surroundings blurred, and I walked in a daze. When I passed the council hall, the group of beggars who always hovered near the steps began to follow me. "Sorry, I can't help you today," I called over my shoulder. The group returned to the hall, but one persisted. I turned around. I said,
"Lovely lady, spare a copper?"
the man asked. Dirt streaked his face and his hair hung in greasy clumps. His clothes were torn and filthy, and he smelled like horse manure. But he couldn't disguise those penetrating sapphire blue eyes from me.
"Can't you spare a copper for the man who just saved your life?" Valak asked.
"I'm broke. I had to pay off the distraction. Those kids don't work cheap."
"What?"
"Unity Fountain. A quarter hour." Valak returned to the steps and joined the other beggars. I continued toward the keep, but once I was out of sight of the council hall, I took a side street and headed to the Unity Fountain. The jade sphere with its holes and other spheres nestled inside it shone in the sunlight. The water spray from the circle of water spouts sparkled in the cool air. My relief from knowing that Valak was unharmed warred with my concern that he should be far away from the citadel. A quick movement in a shadow caught my attention. I wandered over to the dark recess of a doorway and joined Valak, embracing him for a fierce moment before pulling back.
"Thank you for helping me against Ferda," I said.
"Now go home before you get caught." Valak smiled.
"And miss all the fun?"
"No, love. I'm going with you on your errand." I could only produce a muted surprise. Valak and I didn't have a mental connection like the one I'd had with Iris, yet he knew my thoughts.
and when I had needed his help, he had always been there.
There's no way I can convince you to go to Ixia? My brief spurt of energy on seeing Valak safe faded.
None.
All right. Although I reserve the right to say I told you so should you get captured.
I tried to say it in a stern tone, but my battered and tired soul was so filled with relief that Valak was coming with me that the words turned playful.
Agreed. Valak's eyes lit up, anticipating the challenge.
Chapter 34. Valak and I decided on the best course of action and arranged to meet again at the edge of the Avibian Plains. When I reached the keep, I went straight to my rooms to pack. While I determined what to take along, someone knocked on my door. Out of habit, I looked for my bow before realizing it had been destroyed by Leaf. Instead, I grabbed my switchblade. I relaxed a bit when I opened the door. Iris stood there, looking hesitant. Stepping back, I invited her in.
"I have some news," Iris said.
When I just stared at her, she continued,
"Ferda has been taken to the keep cells, and the council has revoked your expulsion. They want you to stay so you can fully explore your magical abilities."
"Who would teach me?" Iris glanced at the ground.
"It would be your choice."
"I'll think about it."
Iris nodded and turned to go, then stopped. "I'm sorry, Yelena. I had no trust in your abilities, and yet you achieved what four master magicians could not."
There was still a faint link between us, and I felt Iris's uncertainty and her loss of confidence. She questioned her ability to handle future difficult situations. She felt her beliefs on what was needed to solve a problem had been proven wrong. In this situation, magic was not the solution, I told her. It was the lack of magic that allowed me to beat Ferda, and I couldn't have done that without Valak. She considered my words for a moment and seemed to make a decision.
"I propose a partnership," Iris said.
"A partnership?" I asked.
"I believe you no longer need a teacher, but a partner to help you discover just how strong a soul finder you are."
I winced at the title. "Do you think I'm one?"
"I've suspected, but didn't want to really believe it. An automatic response just like your cringe just now. And it seems I need some guidance. I found that the Sishan way is not always appropriate. Perhaps you could help me with that."
"Are you sure you would want to learn the rush into a situation and hope for the best method?"
"As long as you want to discover more about being a soul finder. Is it really against the ethical code? Perhaps the code needs to be updated. And could you be considered a master, or would you have to take the master's test first?"
"The master test? I've heard some horror stories." My throat began to tighten. I swallowed with some difficulty.
"Rumors, mostly. To discourage the students so that only those who feel confident in their abilities will be brave enough to ask to take the test."
"And if they're not strong enough?"
"They won't succeed. But they'll learn the full extent of their powers. This is better than being surprised later."
Iris fell silent. I felt her mind reaching toward mine.
"Do we have a deal?"
she asked in my mind. "I'll think about it. A lot has happened."
"So it has," she agreed. "Let me know when you're ready."
Iris left my rooms. I closed the door. My mind shuffled through the possibility of exploring my powers versus the risk of being condemned as a soul finder. Despite having to worry about poison in the commander's food, I began to think life in Ixia had been easier. After my errand, as Valak so casually called it, I had some choices on where to go next. Nice to have choices. Again. I moved through my rooms, checking if I missed anything. I had packed the Valmer statue for Valak, the rest of my Sishan coins, my northern uniform, and an extra set of clothes. My armoire remained filled with my apprentice's robes and a couple of nutty skirt pants. Papers and books piled on my desk, and the room smelled of appleberry and lavender. My stomach squeezed with longing and with a sudden realization. These rooms in the keep had turned into my home, despite my resistance. Shouldering my pack, I felt the weight of it drag on me as I left. Stopping at the Keep's guest quarters on my way, I visited my parents. I could hear Esau in the kitchen, and Pearl had a strange expression on her face. Her hand touched her neck, so I knew something had upset her. She made me promise to stay for tea, pulling my backpack off, and she hovered over me until I sat in one of the pink, overstuffed chairs. Calling to Esau to bring another cup, Pearl perched in the seat next to me as if she would spring into action should I decide to leave. Esau brought in the tea tray. She jumped up and handed me one of the steaming cups. Seeming to be satisfied that I was anchored to my chair, at least until I finished the tea, Pearl said,
"You're leaving, aren't you?"
She shook her head before I could answer.
"Not that you would tell me. You treat me like a delicate flower. I'll have you know that the most delicate flowers often produce the strongest scent when crushed."
She stared at me. "I have some unfinished business to attend to. I'll be back," I said. But the weak response failed to soothe her.
"Don't lie to me."
I wasn't lying.
"All right. Then don't lie to yourself."
She eyed my bulging pack that she had set on the floor.
"Send us word when you're settled in Ixia, and we'll come visit," she said in a matter-of-fact tone. "Though probably not until the hot season. I don't like the cold."
"Mother!" I stood and almost spilled my drink. Esau nodded, seeming nonplussed by the topic of our conversation.
"I'd like to find the mountain laurel that grows near the ice pack. I read somewhere that the plant can cure Kronik's cough. Be interesting to find out."
"You're not concerned that I might return to Ixia?" I asked my parents.
"Considering the week you had," my father said, "we're just happy you're alive. Besides, we trust your judgment."
"If I do go to Ixia, will you promise to visit often?"
They promised. Not wanting to prolong the goodbyes, I snatched my pack and left.
"Apple?"
Kiki asked with a hopeful tone.
"No, but I'll get you some peppermints."
I went into the barn's tack room to search for the bag of candy. I took two and returned to Kiki. After she sucked the candy down, I asked her, "Ready to go?"
"Yes." "Shuttle?"
"Not this time."
The Keep provided tack for the students, but it was understood that once a student graduated, he bought his own equipment. I pulled the step stool over and Kiki snorted.
I know," I said. "No step stool in Wild."
"But I'm tired."
In fact, what little energy I had left leaked away with an alarming speed. Kiki and I didn't encounter any trouble at either the Keep's or the Citadel's gates. We took the road through the valley for a while. I refused to look back at the Citadel. I planned to come back, didn't I? Today wouldn't be the last time I saw the pastel colors of the sunset reflected in the white marble walls.
Right?
As the light faded from the sky, I heard the pounding of hooves on the road behind me. Kiki stopped and spun to face the newcomer.
"Topaz," she said with pleasure.
Though by the molten anger and murderous expression on Cahill's face, I knew this encounter would be far from pleasant.
"Where do you think you're going?" he demanded.
"That's not your concern." Cahill's face turned a livid red as he sputtered in astonishment.
"Not my concern? Not my concern?"
I saw him rein in his temper. Then, in a deadly rumble, he said,
"You're the heartmate of the most wanted criminal in Citia. Your whereabouts are of the utmost concern to me. In fact, I'm going to personally see to it that I know exactly where you are at all times."
He whistled. I heard a rush of movement and turned in time to see Cahill's men move into defensive positions behind me. Trying to conserve my strength, I hadn't scanned the road ahead with my magic. Hadn't believed I would need to. Silly me.
"Did you smell them, Kiki?" I asked.
"No. Upwind. Go past?"
"Not yet."
Looking back at Cahill, I demanded, "What do you want?"
"Playing the simpleton to delay the inevitable, Yelena? I guess it has worked for you in the past." "You certainly played me for a fool," he said with an eerie calmness. "Convincing me and First Magician that you weren't a spy, using your magic to make me trust you. I fell for it all."
"Cahill, I..."
What I want is to kill Valak. Besides getting revenge for the murder of my family, I will be able to show the Council my abilities and they will finally support me.
You had Valak before and lost him. What makes you think you can kill him this time?
Your heartmate will exchange his life for yours.
You're going to need more men to capture me.
Truly? Take another look.
I glanced over my shoulder. Cahill's men had kept their distance from Kiki's hindquarters, but even in the twilight, I could see that each one held a blowpipe to his mouth, aiming at me.
The darts are treated with curare, Cahill said. An excellent Sishan weapon. You won't get far.
Fear replaced annoyance as my heart rate increased. I had some theobroma in my pack, but I knew if I tried to take it off my back, I would become a pincushion for Cahill's men.
Will you cooperate, or do I need to have you immobilized?
Cahill sounded as if he asked if I would like some tea.
Ghost, Kiki said.
Before I could understand what Kiki meant, Valak sauntered into our group from the tall grass of the plains. Everyone froze for a second in shock.
Cahill gaped. That's an interesting choice, love, Valak said. You'll need some time to think it over. In the meantime...
Valak held his arms away from his body as he moved closer to Cahill. He had changed from his beggar disguise into the plain brown tunic and pants that the local citizens wore. He appeared to be unarmed, but I knew better. And it seemed so did Cahill, who transferred Topaz's reins to his left hand and pulled his sword.
Let's see if I have this right, Valak continued, seeming unconcerned about Cahill's sword a few feet away.
You want revenge for your family.
Understandable. But you should know that the royal family is not your family.
One thing I have learned over the years is to know my enemy.
The royal bloodline ended the day the commander took control of Ixia. I made sure of that.
You lie!
Cahill urged Topaz forward, lunging at Valak with his sword.
Stepping to the side with grace and speed, Valak avoided being trampled and cut.
When Cahill turned Topaz for another charge, I said,
It makes sense. Valak wouldn't leave a job unfinished.
He pulled back on the bridle, stopping in disbelief.
Your love for him has damaged your senses. And your hunger for power has affected your intelligence. Your men are using you, yet you refuse to see the obvious.
Cahill shook his head.
I won't listen to any more lies. My men are loyal. They obey me or else they will be punished. Gol's death helped me to reinforce that lesson.
I recognized that flatness in his pale blue eyes.
You killed Gol.
He smiled.
My men have pledged their lives to me. I committed no crime.
He brandished his sword.
Ready? He called to his men. Aim and...
Think about this before you gloat about your men, Cahill. They looked to Captain Marek for approval before following your orders.
They gave you a sword that was too heavy for you and failed to properly train you with it.
You are supposed to be related to the king, who was a powerful magician. Why don't you have any magic?
Cahill hesitated. His men glanced at each other in either consternation or confusion. I couldn't tell, but it broke their concentration. And in that moment, Valak leaped onto Kiki's back behind me. She took off into the plains without being told. I grabbed her mane as Valak's arms encircled my waist, and Kiki broke into her gust of wind gait.
I heard Cahill yell fire, and thought I heard the whiz of a dart near my ear, but we were soon out of range.
Kiki traveled twice the distance of a normal gallop without any obvious effort. When the moon had reached its apex, Kiki slowed, then stopped.
Smell gone, she said.
Valak and I slid off her back. I inspected her for injuries before she snorted with impatience and moved away to graze. I shivered in the cold air, searching my body for darts before wrapping my cloak tighter.
That was close.
Not really, Valak said, pulling me toward him.
We distracted the men, so when Wannabe King gave the order, they didn't have time to aim. Valak felt warm, even though he wasn't wearing a cloak. Seeming to read my thoughts, he said,
I'll share yours.
He smiled with a mischievous delight.
But first you need a fire, food, and some sleep.
I shook my head.
I need you.
It didn't take me long to convince him. Once I had divested him of his clothes, he elected to join me in my cloak. I woke to the delightful smell of roasting meat. Squinting in the bright sunlight, I saw Valak crouched near a fire. He had set up a spit of meat over the glowing embers.
"Breakfast?" I asked as my stomach rumbled.
"Dinner. You've slept all day." I sat up.
"You should have woken me. What if Cahill finds us?"
"Doubtful with all this magic in the air." Valak peered into the sky, scenting the wind. "Does it bother you?" I opened my mind to the power surrounding us. The sand seed's protective magic tried to invade and confuse Valak's thoughts, but his immunity deflected the strands of power with ease. The magic seemed indifferent to my presence.
"No."
I told Valak about my distant relationship to the Sandseed clan. If I came close to their village with the intent to harm them, I think the protection would attack me. Then I thought about Moon Man's magical abilities and his scimitar. Either that or one of their story weavers would.
Valak considered. "How long will it take us to reach the Davian Plateau?"
"It depends on Kiki. If she decides to use her gust of wind gate, we could be there in a few hours."
"Gust of wind? Is that what you call it? I've never seen a horse run that fast before."
I mulled over Valak's comment. "She only does it when we're in the plains. Perhaps it's connected to the sand seed's magic."
Valak shrugged.
"Faster is better. The faster we can take care of Alea, the better." But exactly how we would take care of Alea remained the real question. I knew she would be a threat to me if she had survived her injury, yet I didn't want to kill her. Perhaps turning her over to the sand seeds would be enough. I thought about Moonman's remarks about the Davian vermin, and realized that Furta's comment about the existence of others might not have been about Alea coming after me, but about the other Davians.
Valak pulled the meat from the fire and handed the spit to me. "Eat. You need your strength."
I sniffed the unidentifiable lump.
"What is it?"
He laughed.
"You're better off not knowing."
"Poisons?"
"You tell me," he teased.
I took an experimental bite. The juicy meat had an odd, earthy taste. Some type of rodent, I thought, but no poisons. When I had finished my supper, we began to pack up our meager supplies.
"Valak, after we deal with Alea, you must promise to return to Ixia."
He grinned.
"Why would I do that? I'm beginning to enjoy the climate. I might build a summer home here."
"It's that cocky attitude that got you into trouble in the first place."
"No, love. It was you.
If you hadn't gotten yourself captured by Ghol, I wouldn't have tipped my hand to the wannabe king."
"You didn't tip your hand.
I'm afraid I did that when I was fighting with Cahill."
"Defending my honor again?" he asked.
Back in Ixia, I had inadvertently exposed one of his undercover operations by standing up for him.
"Yes."
He shook his head in amazement.
"I know you love me, so you can stop proving it. I really don't care what wannabe king thinks of me."
I thought about Cahill.
"Valak, I'm sorry for believing you killed Ghol."
He waved away my apology.
"You would have been right.
I went back to take care of him for you, but he had beaten me to it." Valak's angular features grew serious.
"The wannabe king remains a problem."
I nodded. "One that I'll deal with."
"Now who's cocky?"
I started to protest, but Valak stopped me with a kiss. When he pulled away, I noticed that Kiki's head was up and her ears pointed forward.
"Smell?" I asked her.
Then I heard the sound of hoofbeats heading toward us.
"Rizalka," Kiki said. "Sad man."
My first reaction was annoyance that Leaf had followed us. But the thought that if he could find us, then so could Cahill, filled me with apprehension.
"Anyone else?" I asked.
"No."
Valak disappeared into the tall grass just as Leaf's horse seemed to materialize from a cloud of dust. Leaf's green eyes were wide with shock.
"She's never done that before."
My annoyance transformed to amusement. Rizalka's black coat gleamed with sweat, but she didn't appear to be stressed. "I call that Kiki's gust of wind gate," I told Leaf.
Is Rizalka a sandseed horse? He nodded. Before he could say another word, I saw a blur of motion to his left as Valak leaped out of the grass and knocked Leaf from his horse. They landed together with Valak on top of Leaf's chest. He held Leaf's machete to Leaf's throat as my brother struggled to get his breath.
What are you doing here? Valak asked.
Come to find Yelena, Leaf said between gasps.
Why? By this time I'd recovered from my surprise. It's all right, Valak. He's my brother. Valak moved the blade away, but remained on top of him. Leaf's face twisted into an expression of astonished terror.
Valak? You have no smell. No aura, Leaf said.
Is he a simpleton? Valak asked me.
I grinned. No. I pulled Valak from Leaf. His magic can sense a person's soul. Your immunity must be blocking his power. I bent over Leaf and examined him, looking for broken bones with my magic. I didn't find any serious injuries.
Are you all right? I asked Leaf.
He sat up and glanced nervously at Valak.
That depends.
Don't worry about him. He's overprotective. Valak harumphed.
If you could keep out of trouble for one day, protecting you wouldn't be so instinctive.
He rubbed his leg.
Or so painful.
Leaf had recovered from his shock and stood. My annoyance returned.
Why are you here? I asked.
He looked at Valak, then at the ground.
It was something Mother said.
I waited.
She told me that you were lost again, and only the brother that had searched for you for 14 years could find you.
How did you find me?
Leaf gestured a bit wildly at his horse.
Kiki had found topaz in the plains, so I thought, since Rizalka was bred by the sand seeds, I asked her to find Kiki. And...
She found us very fast.
I mulled over what Leaf had said about our mother. Why does Pearl think I'm lost? And why send you?
You weren't any help the last time.
Now I had to suppress the urge to punch him. He had almost killed me with his machete at Ferda's house.
Leaf cringed with guilt. I don't know why she sent me.
I was about to tell him to go home when Moonman walked into sight.
A good guy, I said to Valak before he could attack him.
This seems to be quite the meeting place, Valak muttered under his breath.
When Moonman came closer, I asked, No mysterious arrival? No coalescing from a sunray? Where's the paint? The scars on his arms and legs stood out against his dark skin, and he wore a pair of short pants.
It is no fun when you already know those tricks, Moonman said. Besides, Ghost would have killed me if I had suddenly appeared.
Ghost? I asked. Moonman pointed to Valak.
Kiki's name for him. It makes sense, he said, seeing the look of confusion on my face. To magical beings, we see the world through our magic. We see him with our eyes, but cannot see him with our magic. So he is like a ghost to us.
Valak listened to Moonman. Although expressionless, I could tell by the rigid set to Valak's shoulders that he was prepared to strike.
Another relative? Valak asked.
A broad smile stretched Moonman's lips.
Yes, I am her mother's uncle's wife's third cousin.
He is a story weaver, a magician of the Sandseed clan, I explained. And what are you doing here? Moonman's playfulness faded from his face.
You are on my lands. I could ask you the same thing, but I already know why you have come. I came to make sure you keep your promise.
What promise?
Leaf and Valak asked at the same time. I waved the question away.
I will, but not now. We need... I know what you intend to do. You will not succeed with that unless you untangle yourself, Moonman said.
Me? But I thought you said... I stopped. He had made me promise to untie Leaf, but then I remembered that Moonman had said our lives twisted together. But what did helping Leaf have to do with going after Alea? Why won't I succeed? I asked.
Moonman refused to answer.
Do you have any more cryptic advice? I asked. He held out his hands, one toward Leaf and the other to me.
Valak huffed in either amusement or annoyance, I couldn't tell, but he said,
Looks like a family affair.
I'll be close by if you need me, love. I studied Leif. His reaction to the story weaver the last time we had met him had been one of fear. Now he stepped forward and grabbed Moonman's hand, shooting me a look of stubborn determination.
Let's finish this, Leif said, challenging me.
Chapter 35. I slid my hand into Moonman's. My world melted as the warm magic of the story weaver took control of my senses. We traveled to the Ilias jungle to the place Leif had hidden while watching Mogkin kidnap me over 14 years ago. The three of us viewed the events through Leif's eyes and felt his emotions, in essence, becoming him.
A mean approval that Yelena got what she deserved for not staying close to him spiked Leif's heart. But when the strange man put her to sleep and pulled his pack and sword from under a bush, sudden fear of getting taken by the man kept Leif in his hiding place.
He stayed there long after the man had carried his sister away. Moonman manipulated the story's thread for a moment, showing Leif and me what would have happened if Leif had tried to rescue me.
The ring of steel rolled through the jungle as Mogkin pulled his sword from its scabbard and stabbed Leif in the heart, killing him. Remaining hidden had been a good decision. The story then changed, and focused on Pearl and Esau's despair and anger when Leif had finally told them that I was lost.
Leif believed he would be in worse trouble if he had told them the truth and they knew he hadn't done anything to stop the man.
Leif had been convinced that the search parties would find the man and his sister.
Already he felt jealous of the attention she would get for just being rescued.
When the search parties failed to find her, Leif began his own quest.
He knew they lived in the jungle, keeping out of sight just to spite him.
He had to find her, and maybe his mother and father would love him again.
As the years passed, his guilt drove him to attempt suicide, and eventually, the guilt transformed into hatred.
When she finally came back into their lives, stinking of blood and of the North, he wanted to kill her.
Especially when he saw, for the first time in 14 years, the pure joy on his mother's face.
Cahill's ambush, while unexpected, gave Leif a receptive audience about the need to get rid of the Northern spy. But watching her get hurt caused a small rip of concern in his black cloak of hate. Her escape from Cahill was proof he had been right about her.
But then she came back, insisting she wasn't a spy and therefore would not run away like one.
Rose then confirmed her claims, puzzling Leif.
His confusion and conflicting emotions only grew when he saw her try to help Tula. Why would she care about another?
She hadn't cared about him or how he suffered while she was gone.
He wanted to keep hating her, but when she struggled to bring Tula back, he couldn't bear the guilt if he stood by and did nothing again.
When they traveled to the plains and Storyweaver approached, Leif had known his sister would discover the truth about him. He ran, unable to face the accusations that would fill her eyes.
But when he calmed, he thought, would the truth be that difficult for her? She weathered so much in Ixia. Perhaps she could overcome this hurdle too. But after she had returned from the plains, Leif knew it was impossible.
Her anger and censure flamed on her skin.
She didn't want him or need him. Only his mother's pleas that he help his sister made him seek her out. Storyweaver let the strands of the tale fade.
The three of us stood on that dark plain I remembered from my last encounter with Moonman.
His coloring matched a ray of moonlight.
Leif glanced around with wonder.
Why did Mother ask you to help me rescue Gelsi? I asked Leif.
She thought I could assist you in some way. Instead, I had tried to...
kill me?
You can join the I Want to Kill Yelena Guild.
I hear they have 6 members in good standing. Valak is president since he had wanted to kill me twice.
I smiled, but Leif stared at me with guilt in his eyes.
It wasn't you. Ferda tapped into your memories and used them.
I did want to kill you before you helped Tula. Leif hung his head.
Don't feel ashamed for having those feelings and those memories. What happened in the past can't be changed, but they can be a guide for what happens in your future.
Moonman radiated approval. We could make a story weaver out of you if you were not already a soul finder. He flashed me a wide smile.
Truly? How many people would I need to hear it from before I believed it or felt it? Perhaps it would be best not to declare myself a soul finder, and just be regular old Yelena. Moonman raised an eyebrow.
Come visit me when you are ready.
Then the world spun, and I shut my eyes against the feelings of vertigo. When they stopped, I opened them, finding myself back in the plains with Leaf. Moonman was talking to Valak. I digested what happened on the stony plain. Leaf had been in the process of untying himself. His road had smoothed when he made the decision to help me with Tula. So why had Moonman asked me to help him? I looked for the story weaver, but he had disappeared. Then the answer came to me, and along with it, my own guilt. Without truly understanding Leaf, I had treated him badly, holding the actions of an 8-year-old boy against a grown man, and failing to see how he tried to amend them. Leaf watched me. How come they never schedule a New Beginnings feast when you really need to start over? I asked. Leaf smiled at me, the first genuine one since I had returned from Ixia. It warmed me to the core of my soul.
That's okay. I don't dance, he said.
You will, I promised. Valak cleared his throat.
Touching as this is, we need to go. Your story weaver is providing us with some soldiers to aid against Alea's people. We're to rendezvous with them at dawn.
I take it your brother,
Leaf, I filled in, is coming along?
Of course, Leaf said.
No, I said at the same time. I don't want you to get hurt. Mother wouldn't like it.
And I wouldn't be able to face her wrath if I didn't stay and help.
Leaf crossed his arms over his chest, his square jaw set into a stubborn line.
Your mother sounds like a formidable woman, Valak said into the silence.
You have no idea, Leaf replied with a sigh.
Well, if she's anything like Yelena, my deepest sympathies, Valak teased.
Hey! Leaf laughed, and the tense moment dissipated. Valak handed Leaf his machete. Do you know how to use it?
Of course. I chopped Yelena's bow into firewood, Leaf joked.
You took me by surprise. I didn't want to hurt you, I shot back.
Leaf looked dubious. How about a rematch?
Any time. Valak stepped between us. I'm beginning to wish that you were an orphan, love.
Can you both manage to focus on the task at hand without trying to catch up on 14 years of sibling rivalry?
Yes, we said in unison, properly chastised.
Good. Then let's go.
Where? I asked.
In keeping with his cryptic nature, all your story weaver said was, the horses know where to go.
Valak shrugged. It's certainly not a military strategy I would use, but I've learned that the South uses its own strategy. And strangely enough, it works.
The horses did know where to go, and as the sun rose over the plains, we encountered a group of sand-seed soldiers on a rocky outcropping surrounded by tall grass. A dozen men and 6 women dressed in leather armor and equipped with either scimitars or spears waited. They had painted red streaks on their faces and arms, creating an impressively fierce countenance. There were no other horses. Valak and I jumped off Kiki, and Leaf dismounted Rizalka to join us. The 2 horses began to graze. I shivered in the cold morning air, feeling naked without my bow, wishing I had another weapon besides my switchblade. Moonman greeted us. He had dressed like his clansmen, but he was armed with his scimitar and a bow. The bow he held was no ordinary staff of ebony wood. It had been carved with symbols and animals, revealing a gold-colored wood under the black surface. And I felt that, if I could just stare at it long enough, the carvings may reveal a story. I shook my head, trying to stay focused on Moonman's words.
I sent a scout last night, Moonman said. He found the bloodletting apparatus in the void, just as Yelena described. Then he tracked the Davian vermin to a campsite about 1 mile east of that location. We are on the edge of the plains about 2 miles north of that site.
We'll wait until dark and launch a surprise attack, Valak said.
That will not work, Moonman said. The vermin have a shield that will alert them to intruders.
My scout could not get too close to their camp for fear of discovery.
Moonman appeared to scan the horizon.
They have strong warpers who can hide their whereabouts from our magic.
Warpers? Leaf asked.
Moonman frowned. Magicians. I refuse to call them story weavers, for they manipulate the threads for their own selfish desires. I glanced at the group of sand seeds, noting again the array of weapons. You don't plan to use your magic?
No.
And you don't plan to take prisoners?
That is not the sand seed way. The vermin must be exterminated.
I wanted to neutralize the threat of Alea, but I didn't want to kill her. Esau's vial of curare still remained in my backpack. Perhaps I could paralyze her and take her back to the keep cells.
How are you going to prevent the Davians from using their magic? Valak asked.
A dangerous glint flashed in Moonman's eyes.
We move the void.
You can do that, I asked, surprised.
The blanket of power can be repositioned only with the utmost care. We will center the blanket's hold directly over the vermin's camp, and then we will attack.
When? Valak asked.
Now.
Moonman walked over to his soldiers.
I'd hoped to use the sand seeds as a distraction, Valak said to me in a low whisper. This will work. Once Alea is dead, we leave. This isn't our fight.
I think capture and incarceration would be a harsher punishment for her, I said. Valak studied me for a moment.
As you wish.
Moonman's group shouted a war cry, then disappeared into the tall grass.
He came back to us. They will position themselves around the camp. The signal to attack will be when the void is in place. You are to come with me.
He glanced at the three of us.
You need weapons. Here.
He tossed his bow to me. I caught it in my right hand.
That is yours. A gift from Suakre.
Who?
A horsewoman of our clan.
You must have made an impression on her. Her gifts are as rare as the snow. Your story is etched into it.
Mother,
Kiki said with approval, and I remembered the short-haired sandseed woman who had taken Kiki for a ride the day I had met with the elders. I marveled at the bow. The balance and thickness felt perfect in my hand, and despite the carvings, the black wood remained smooth and strong.
By the time I pulled my eyes from the beauty of the bow, I saw that Valak clutched a scimitar and Leaf wielded his machete.
Let us go.
I took off my cloak and made a few quick preparations before we followed Moonman into the tall grass. From our position near the Davian camp, I could see some activity around their tents and campfire. The air hovering over their site seemed to shimmer, and it distorted the images of the people inside as if a massive pocket of heat had been trapped over them. The grasses of the plateau grew in small clumps and had turned brown from lack of rain. I crouched with Valak behind a small bush. Leaf and Moonman were 500 feet to our right, huddled in a slight depression. I wondered how the other sand seeds had fared in finding hiding spots. The Davians had chosen a wide open area for their camp, and cover was minimal. I felt the hair raise on my arms as power pressed against my skin. Seeking out with my awareness, I felt Moonman and three other magicians tug the blanket of power. They applied equal pressure so the blanket would not gather in one location, but would move smoothly. Their magical abilities impressed me, and I thought if I did stay in Cydia, the sand seeds would make powerful teachers. The void's arrival felt like all the air had been sucked out of my lungs. My awareness of my surroundings reduced to the mundane senses of sight, smell, and sound. Before I could adapt to my magical loss, another war cry sounded. The signal to attack the camp. I jumped to my feet and followed Valak toward the camp, and stopped dead in my tracks when the scene in front of me registered in my mind. The Davian's shield had been destroyed, and with it, the illusion. Instead of a few people milling about the campfire, there stood over 30. Instead of a handful of tents, there were rows and rows of them. Granted, most of the vermin stared in shock at the loss of their magic, but we were outnumbered 4-1. Too late to retreat. We had the element of surprise and 19 battle-thirsty sand seeds, who cut wide, bloody swaths through the Davians. I could see Moonman's bald head above the fighting, and Leaf's powerful strikes kept a couple of Davians busy. Valak shot me a grim look. Find Alea, he mouthed to me before joining in the fray. Great, I thought, edging around the outskirts of the battle. Find Alea in this massive confusion. I ducked as a Davian swung his scythe at me. I swept his feet from under him and hopped onto his chest before he could raise his long weapon. Ramming the end of my bow into his neck, I crushed his windpipe. I paused for a heartbeat. He was the first person I killed since coming to Citia. I had hoped never to take a life again, but if I wanted to survive this melee, I couldn't afford to be compassionate. Another Davian attacked. My melancholy thoughts disappeared as I defended myself and searched for Alea. Dodging and fighting, I lost all track of time as the series of matches began to blur together. In the end, Alea found me. Her long black hair had been pulled back into a knot, and she wore a simple white tunic and pants that were splattered with blood. She held a bloody short sword in each hand. Alea smiled at me.
I plan to find you, she said.
How nice that you saved me the trouble.
That's just how I am, always thinking of others. She crossed her swords in a mock salute and lunged. I stepped back and brought my bow down on the top of her blades, deflecting them toward the ground. She took a step forward to regain her balance just as I shuffled closer to her. We touched shoulders, our weapons pointed down. But mine remained on top. I yanked the bow up, hitting her in the face. She yelped as blood gushed from her nose. My strike failed to stop her, and she tried to swing her swords toward my stomach. I moved next to her, too close for large weapons. We dropped them. I triggered my switchblade as she pulled a knife from her belt. She turned and stabbed at me. I blocked her blade with my arm. Pain burned as the knife bit into my flesh, but the move allowed me to grab her hand. I pulled her toward me and sliced her forearm with my blade, then released her. Alea staggered back in confusion. I could have plunged my knife into her stomach, killing her. Her expression turned to horror as she realized what I had done. My switchblade had been treated with curare. All I had needed to do was prick her skin with the tip of the weapon. When she fell to the ground, I stood over her. It's not fun being helpless, is it? I asked. I looked around. Valak had maneuvered himself so that he stayed between me and the Davians, keeping the others from interfering with my fight with Alea. Leaf fought a short distance away, hacking with his machete. I couldn't see the other sand seeds, but I spotted Moonman just as he took a man's head off with his scimitar.
Yuck.
Moonman sprinted for us.
Time to retreat, he called.
Next time, I said to Alea, we'll finish this. Then the void moved, and the magic came back for half of the campsite, creating a diversion. We were bathed in power, and I felt Moonman encompass us in a shield of protective magic as we began our retreat. Valak, though, paused over Alea's still form. He knelt beside her, picked up her knife, and said something to her. Before I could call to him, he cut her throat in one smooth move. It was the same lethal strike that he had delivered to her brother, Magken. When Valak caught up to me, he said, "We can't afford to play favorites." We raced back toward the plains. The vermin ceased chasing us at the border of the Avibian Plains, but we kept our pace until we reached the rocky outcropping where Kiki and Rizalka waited.
"No doubt they will move their camp farther into the plateau," Moonman said.
The effort of running had not winded him, although his skin gleamed with sweat.
"I will need to bring more soldiers. To have deceived my scout and me means their warpers are more powerful than we suspected. I must consult with the elders."
Moonman inclined his head in farewell, and I soon lost sight of him in the grass.
"What now?" Leaf asked.
I met Valak's gaze. What now indeed?
"You go home, and so will I," I said to Leaf.
"You're coming with me to the keep?" Leaf asked.
Back to the keep and the feelings of isolation? Back to being feared for my abilities? Or back to spy on Citia so I could eventually return to Ixia? Or just being on my own, exploring Citia and spending time with my family?
"I think you're afraid to go back to the keep," Leaf said.
"What?"
"It will be much easier for you to stay away, and not have to deal with being a soul finder, being a daughter, and being a sister."
I'm not afraid. I had tried to find a place in Cydia, but I kept getting pushed away. How many hints did I need? I wasn't a glutton for punishment. What if they decided that a soul finder equaled evil, and they burned me alive for violating their ethical code?
You are afraid, Leaf challenged.
Am not.
Are too.
Am not.
Then prove it.
I opened my mouth, but no sound came out. Finally, I said, I hate you. Leaf smiled.
The feeling is mutual.
He paused for a moment.
Are you coming?
Not now. I'll think about it.
It was a delay tactic, and Leaf knew it. If you don't come back to the keep, then I'll be right. And every time you see me, I'll be insufferably smug.
And how's that different from now? He laughed, and I could see the young, carefree boy he had been in his eyes.
You've only had a small glimpse of how insufferable and annoying I can be. As the older brother, it's my birthright.
Leaf mounted Rizalka and galloped away. Valak and I walked with Kiki toward the north, toward Ixia. He held my hand, and I felt content as my thoughts mulled over the last few hours. Valak, what did you say to Alea?
I told her how her brother had died.
I remembered how I had trapped Mogkin with magic, immobilizing him so Valak could cut his throat. Alea died the exact same way.
We had no time to take Alea with us, love. I wasn't going to let her have another chance to hurt you.
How do you always know when I need you? Valak's eyes flamed with an intensity that I had rarely seen.
I know. It's part of me like hunger or thirst, a need that must be met to survive.
How do you do it? I can't connect my mind to yours with my magic, and you don't have magic. It should be impossible. Valak remained quiet for a moment. Perhaps when I feel your distress, I relax my guard and allow you to connect with me.
Perhaps.
Have you ever done that for anyone else?
No, love. You're the only one who has caused me to do the oddest things. You have truly poisoned me.
I laughed.
Odd, eh?
It's a good thing you can't read my mind, love. A sapphire blue fire smoked in his eyes, and I noticed a tightening in his lean muscles.
Oh, I know what you're thinking.
I stepped into his arms, putting my hands under his waistband to where his thoughts had traveled, making my point.
I can't hide from you,
Valak panted. I heard Kiki snort and move away as my world filled with the feel and smell and taste of Valak. Valak and I spent the next several days walking the plains and enjoying being together without any worries or problems hovering over our heads. We would discover small caches of food and water along our path. And while I didn't have the feeling that someone watched us, I felt that the sand seeds knew where we were, and the provisions were their way of extending their hospitality to a distant cousin. Eventually, we left the plains. Skirting east of the citadel, we headed north through the Featherstone clan's lands. Careful to travel at night and hide during the day, it took us 3 days to reach the ambassador's retinue. I had lost track of the days and been surprised to see their camp, but Valak had known they would be about a half-day's walk to the Ixian border. After determining where the Sishan spies hid, Valak changed into his Ilum disguise and slipped into the camp in the middle of the night. I waited and approached the next day. There was no reason for me to hide, and if I went back to Ixia, the Sishan spies could report back to the keep and the council that I had left. The Ixians had begun to pack up their equipment when I rode in on Kiki. One tent still stood, but Ari and Janko rushed over to greet me before I could reach it.
Didn't I tell you, Ari? She's come to say goodbye after all. And you were pouting and miserable for days, Janko said.
Ari just rolled his eyes, and I knew if anyone was miserable, it was Janko.
Or have you decided that you can't bear to be parted from us and are going to disguise yourself as a soldier and come back to Ixia?
Janko's smile was hopeful.
Beating you in a bow fight every day is really tempting, Janko.
He scoffed. I know your tricks now. I won't be so easy to beat.
Are you sure you want me to come?
I have a tendency to cause trouble.
That's what I'm counting on, Janko said. Life has been so dull without you.
Ari shook his massive head. We don't need any more trouble. The diplomatic niceties started falling apart between the ambassador and the Sishin council toward the end. Before we left, one of the counselors had accused the ambassador of bringing Valak to Sitia to assassinate the council.
Not good, I said.
The Sishins are constantly worried the commander will want to take control of their lands.
And I would be too, knowing that Valak possessed the skills to assassinate the counselors as well as the master magicians, creating enough chaos so there is little resistance to an Ixian attack.
I shook my head, sighing. The Ixians and Sishins viewed the world so differently. They needed someone to help them understand each other. A strange feeling churned in my stomach. Fear? Excitement? Nausea?
Perhaps all three. It was hard to tell.
Speaking of Valak, Janko said, I take it he's well?
You know Valak, I said.
Janko nodded, grinning.
I'd better talk to the ambassador. I slid off Kiki. Before I could move, Ari's large hand grabbed my arm.
Just make sure you say goodbye to Janko, Ari said. You think he's annoying when he's in a good mood. He's worse when he's in a bad mood.
I promised Ari, but as I walked to the ambassador's tent, that odd feeling in the pit of my stomach became almost painful. Goodbye seemed so final.
One of the two guards outside the tent ducked inside to announce me. He came out and held the flap for me to enter. Ambassador Signe sat at a canvas table, drinking tea with Valak, still dressed as Advisor Ilum. Signe dismissed him, and I caught a look and the word tonight from Valak before he left the tent.
Bypassing the pleasantries, Signe asked, Have you decided if you're going to visit us?
I took the Commander Ambrose's order of execution from my pack. My hand trembled slightly and I took a breath to steady my nerves. With this unfortunate clash of opinions between Ixia and Sitia, I believe you both will need a liaison, a neutral party who knows both countries and can facilitate negotiations, assisting them in understanding each other better.
Meaning I wouldn't spy for Ixia, but I offered to help.
I handed Signe the order. The commander must decide what to do with it. And there he stood, in Signe's uniform, studying me with his powerful gold eyes.
I blinked several times.
The transformation from Signe to Commander Ambrose was so complete that I could only see a faint resemblance to the ambassador in his face.
The commander rolled up the execution order and tapped it on his palm as his gaze grew distant.
Considering all the options, I thought, he never made a hasty decision.
A valid point, he said.
He stood and paced the small area. I saw a bedroll on the floor behind him and a lantern. The tent and table appeared to be his only luxuries.
Commander Ambrose stopped, then tore my execution order into small pieces, sprinkling them onto the ground.
Turning, he held out his hand to me.
Agreed, Liaison Yelena.
Liaison Yelena Zoltana, I corrected as we shook hands. We discussed the commander's plans for Ixia and how he wanted to expand trade with Sitia.
He insisted I finish my magical training before becoming the official liaison.
Before I left, I witnessed Ambassador Signe's return. It was then that I felt, for a brief moment, that two souls resided within one body.
That would explain why he had been so successful at keeping his secret. I mulled over the interesting idea to keep my mind off the startling fact that I was going to return to the keep.
The ambassador's retinue finished packing. I told Ari and Janko that I would see them again.
Next time, your ass is mine, Janko sang.
Keep your skills sharp, Ari ordered. It was bad enough having two mothers, now I have two fathers, I teased.
Send word if you need us, Ari said.
Yes, sir.
I headed south as the Ixians traveled north. Pulling a thread of magic, I projected my awareness. One of the Sishin spies followed me in hopes that I would meet up with Valak. I sent the man a confusing array of images until he lost all sense of what he was supposed to do. Remembering Valak's promise, I didn't travel too far. I found an empty wooded area between two farms and set up a small campsite. As the sunlight faded, I projected my awareness into the surrounding woods. A few bats began to wake, and a couple of rabbits crept through the underbrush. All was quiet except for the steady approach of Cahill and his men.
He didn't try to mask his movements. Bold and cocky, Cahill left his men guarding the edge of the wood while he continued toward me.
I sighed, more annoyed than scared, and reached for my bow.
I glanced around.
Nowhere to hide on the ground, although the tree canopy might offer some protection. It might work, except Merrick waited with Cahill's men, and I was certain the captain's tracking skills had led Cahill to me.
I would have to resort to using magic in my defense.
Projecting, I reached toward Cahill's mind. His emotions boiled with hate, but he had tempered them with a cold calculation. He stopped at the edge of my camp and inclined his head.
May I join you?
It depends on your intentions, I said.
I thought you could read my intentions.
He paused.
I see you have decided to stay in Citya. A bold move, considering the Council will know about your involvement with Valak.
I'm not a spy, Cahill, and the Council needs a liaison with Ixia. He barked out a laugh.
You're a liaison now? That's funny. Do you really think the Council will trust you?
Do you think the Council will go to war for a commoner? Cahill sobered for a moment.
He glanced over his shoulder in the direction where his men waited.
I will find out the truth about that. But it really doesn't matter to me anymore. I've decided to take matters into my own hands.
Even though he hadn't moved, I could feel a renewed sense of threat from him.
Why are you telling me this?
You know you can't get to Valak through me.
Besides, he's back in Ixia by now.
He shook his head. As if I would believe you. A beautiful day for riding, and you stop here?
He gestured to the surrounding woods, then took two steps toward me.
I'm here to give you a warning.
Another step. I brandished my bow.
Stop right there. You once said you thought Gull was decent for warning you about his intentions. I thought I would do the same. I know I can't beat you or Valak. Even my men don't have a chance. But someone, somewhere has that ability. I swear I'll find him. And together, we'll make it our mission to see you and Valak dead.
With that, Cahill spun around and headed for his men. I didn't relax my grip on my bow until Cahill mounted Topaz and rode away.
His men followed behind, running to keep up.
As I broke my connection with Cahill's mind, I dipped into Marek's mind.
He was scared and worried about Cahill's odd behavior.
That made two of us. That night, my campfire seemed lonely until Valak arrived. He appeared by the fireside, warming his hands over the flames.
I decided not to ruin our last night together by telling him about Cahill's visit.
Forgot your cloak again? I asked. He smiled.
I like sharing yours.
Long after the fire had died, I fell asleep wrapped in Valak's arms.
When the sun intruded, I burrowed deeper under my cloak.
Come with me, Valak said.
It wasn't a plea or an order. An invitation. Regret ached in my heart. I still have much to learn. And when I'm ready, I'll be the new liaison between Ixia and Citya.
That could lead to serious trouble, Valak teased.
You would be bored if it was any other way.
He laughed.
You're right. And so is my snake.
Snake? He pulled my arm out to expose my bracelet.
When I carved this, my thoughts were on you, love. Your life is like this snake's coils. No matter how many turns it makes, you'll end up back where you belong. With me.
His sapphire eyes held a promise. I'll look forward to your first official visit, but don't wait too long. Please. I won't.
After another kiss, Valak rose, and as he dressed, I told him about Cahill.
Many have tried to kill us. All have failed.
He shrugged.
We've thrown him a curve. Either he'll sulk over his lack of royal blood and disappear, or he'll make himself believe we lied, and will have a renewed determination to attack Ixia.
which should make life interesting for the new liaison.
Interesting isn't the word I would use.
Make sure you keep a close eye on him.
Valak smiled ruefully.
I have to go, love. I promised the ambassador I would catch up with her at the border. If there is going to be any trouble from the Sissians, it would be near there.
I regretted my decision to stay the moment he left, and utter loneliness overcame me. But Kiki's cold nose against my cheek intruded on my morose thoughts.
Kiki stay with Lavender Lady, she said. Kiki help.
Yes, you're a big help.
Smart.
Smarter than me, I agreed.
Apple?
You've grazed all night. How can you still be hungry?
Always room for apple.
I laughed and fed her an apple before we began our 2-day trip back to the keep. When I arrived at the keep's gate, the guard instructed me to go directly to the master's meeting room. As I gave Kiki a quick rubdown at the stables, I wondered what had been going on in my absence. Students hurried from one building to the next as an icy wind blew through the campus. They gave me only a fleeting surprised glance before increasing their pace. The gray sky darkened and sleet cut through the air. An ominous start to the cold season. I pulled my hood up to protect my face. I had arrived in Sitia at the beginning of the hot season. The 2 seasons I had lived here felt more like 2 years. When I entered the conference room, 3 neutral expressions and 1 livid greeted my arrival. Rose threw a ball of furious energy at me. It hit me square on the chest, and I stumbled back before deflecting her attack. Pulling power to me, I projected my awareness toward her. Her mental defenses were impenetrable, but I aimed lower. Through her heart and into her soul, a much more vulnerable spot.
Now, now, I said in her mind, play nice.
She jumped.
What? How?
I have found your soul, Rose. It's dark and nasty in here. You've been hanging around those criminal types too long.
You better change your ways, or this soul won't fly to the sky. Her amber eyes burned into mine with all the hate and loathing she could muster. Underneath, though, she was terrified. Hate and loathing didn't bother me, but fear was a powerful emotion. Fear causes the dog to bite, and Rose was one bitch. I released her. Rose sputtered and glared at me with a poisonous gaze. I stared back with calm patience. Eventually, she stormed from the room.
So it is true, Bane said into the sudden silence. You are a soul finder.
He seemed more thoughtful than scared. What made her so upset? I asked. Iris gestured for me to sit down. I sank into one of the plush chairs.
Rose thinks you and Valak are part of a plot to assassinate the Council.
Before I could respond, Iris went on.
There's no proof. But what is more alarming is Ferda's escape from the keep cells.
I jumped to my feet.
Ferda escaped? When? Where?
Iris exchanged a knowing glance with Bane.
I told you she had nothing to do with his release, she said to him.
Then to me,
we're not sure when. He was discovered missing this morning.
Iris gave me a wry grin.
We think Cahill rescued him.
Cahill? Now I was confused.
He is gone. Captain Merrick was found brutally beaten. Once Merrick regained consciousness, he told us Cahill had tortured him until Merrick had told him the truth.
Iris stopped, shaking her head in astonishment. That Cahill doesn't have royal blood, I said.
You knew? Zitora asked. Why didn't you tell us?
I suspected, but Valak just confirmed my suspicions.
Merrick told us that Cahill's mother had died in childbirth, and he was the son of a soldier slain during the Ixian takeover. When they fled to Sitia, they took him along,
Iris explained.
Where is he now? I asked.
We don't know, Iris said, and we don't know what his plans are now that he has learned the truth, and why he took Ferda with him.
So much for Valak's sulk-and-do-nothing theory about Cahill's reaction to his origins.
I guess we'll just have to find him and ask, I said.
But not yet, Iris said, and sighed. The council is a mess. Since you released all those souls, Ferda is weak, and will be unable to do any magic for quite some time. And...
She hesitated, and I had the unpleasant feeling that I wasn't going to like what she said next.
They want you to explore your soul finder capabilities, and perhaps become a council advisor.
Discovering my abilities matched my own wishes, but if I wanted to be a neutral liaison, I couldn't be attached to the council in any capacity. They don't need a council advisor, I said. They need a liaison with Ixia.
I know, Iris said.
We should go after Ferda and Cahill today.
I know. You'll just have to convince the council of that.
I stared at Iris. My story weaver had to be laughing his blue ass off right now. My future appeared to be a long, twisted road, fraught with knots, tangles, and traps. Just the way I liked it.
This has been an Audible Inc. and Harlequin production of Magic Study by Maria V. Snyder. Read by Gabra Zachman. Executive Producer Beth Anderson. Supervising Producer Arthur G. Insana. Produced and directed by Michelle McGonigal. Chief Engineer Mike Charzik. Engineered by Mike Charzik. Edited by Gary Fink. Music composed by Michael Whalen. Post-production music mix, Gary Fink. Post-production and music supervisor, George James. Copyright 2006 by Maria V. Snyder. Production copyright 2006 by Audible Inc. All rights reserved, including the right of reproduction in whole or in part in any form. This edition is published by arrangement with Harlequin Books, S.A.
If you enjoyed listening to this book, we hope you also enjoy Maria V. Snyder's Poison Study, the first audiobook in this series. Publishers Weekly has this to say about Poison Study. This is one of those rare books that will keep readers dreaming long after they've read it. For other similar audiobooks, download Urban Shaman and Thunderbird Falls by C.E. Murphy.